Welcome to the Mindset for Runners podcast, helping you to access and unlock your true potential as an athlete.
Hey, it's Rob, and welcome to this episode. It's hard to describe what a profound impact the information I'm about to share with you has had on my life. If you take just one thing out of today's episode, you're going to experience a shift on your next run or just in the way you go through your day. And if you build this like one thing into a practice for your life, then your experience of your running and of your interaction with the people closest to you in your life will significantly change, I promise you. Now, I've got a special announcement before we get into the show today. So after running ultra marathons for the past 14 years and working with one-on-one runners, ultra runners, triathletes, endurance athletes, privately, like a one-on-one session for 3 years, I'm so excited to announce that we're finally ready to launch the Mindset for Ultra Runners program. I just can't tell you how excited I am to get this off the ground. And also, you don't need to be an ultra runner, right? This is just what we've called the course for the first cohort. It's for all runners, triathletes, and endurance runners. So over those last 14 years for myself and working with all these athletes one-on-one over the past few years and through doing the podcast, I've learned that runners experience the same set of problems. They experience negative self-talk, which makes running, difficult and unpleasant and sometimes debilitating. Experiencing a lack of motivation, fear of failure, self-doubt, fearing what other people think of them. Suffering from performance anxiety and pre-race anxiety. They don't know how to visualize or use mental imagery. They doubt their ability. They have low confidence. Lack of focus both in running and generally in training and life. Overthinking. They don't know how to calm their mind. They're unsure of what they actually want out of their running and looking for a deeper meaning. They compare themselves to others. They're unable to control where their mind goes as they run, so their focus. And ultimately, they don't reach their potential. And the potential can mean something very different from person to person. So that's exactly why I put together this program, to help you move past these problems and any others that you might be experiencing in your running. So in the program, I'm going to show you how to beat pre-race anxiety, how to craft your own running mindset, both for training and a specific performance mindset, how to use better goal setting and planning strategies to set goals that are meaningful for you, how to overcome mental blocks which might be slowing you down or holding you back from reaching that potential. How to harness the power of visualization and mental imagery. How to control your mind as you run and where your focus goes. How to be consistent. I'll show you how to prepare for your race, both mentally, but also physically, yourself and your crew. How to build confidence, how to reduce stress, and a heap more. And right throughout the program, you'll get full access to me and the team. So I'll guide you through each part of the course. We'll do weekly Q&As and masterclasses, and you'll also have accountability check-ins along the way to help keep you on track and to complete the program. What you'll learn in this program is the exact method I've developed and refined over the past 14 years of running ultras myself, and like I said, that I've been using to help my private clients over the past few years. And now, so excited, it's a digital program fully supported by the team and I. The course is normally $1,995. However, for the launch of this program and for this very first class, we're offering a special price of $697. So to join me and the team and to be part of the first cohort, before you listen to the episode, so just press pause and simply email me. That's robmason.run@gmail.com. robmason.run@gmail.com. So at the time of this recording, we have 8 spaces left for this first cohort. So grab one of those spaces, robmason.run@gmail.com. And I'm just going to say, if you just learn one thing out of all the stuff you're going to learn on this course and take that into your life and into your running, it could be just that one thing that changes everything for you. So grab a spot in the course, email me, robmason.run@gmail.com. And I look forward to seeing you in this very first exciting cohort. Enjoy the episode. Hey, it's Rob. Welcome to this episode of the podcast. I'm really excited about this one, although it has taken me a long time to get to this topic, mainly because I've been resisting it due to it. Gratitude being used as kind of a bit of a cliche in self-help world and in Instagram meme world and all that kind of stuff. So it's here now. And I'm really excited with what I put together to share with you today. So let's just get straight into it. Why are we going to bother working on gratitude as runners, as triathletes, as athletes, and as people. When we get back to the core outcome for mindset work, it is to master our mindset, to take control of our focus, to take control of our mind and put it in the direction that we want to go. Gratitude is one of the key ways that we can access that directional focus of our mind. Gateway has been said by so many experts to be the gateway to other emotions and other perceptions, such as positive emotions, such as presence, is in being present in the present moment. The gateway to grace, if you want to go a bit more esoteric. The gateway to humility, to peace, to calmness. Now, these are states that we want to be in when we are competing. And also the gateway to abundance, again, on a bit more of an esoteric level. So building the emotion of gratitude can also, when I say emotion, it is a collection of emotions to put together. We'll learn a bit more about that later on. It gives us emotional control. So it lowers anxiety. It gives us the ability to reframe events that happen to us as they happen or in the past. In this way, it builds our resilience to traumas that have happened to us in the past and also to our resilience to things that are going to happen to us as we go through life. It lowers our stress levels, increases our motivation. The list goes on and on and on. And just to start with a little bit of research, a study conducted by the University of California, three eminent professors there, last names of Froh, Bono, and the quite prominent gratitude researcher, Dr. Robert Emmons. Now, what they found was that practicing purposeful gratitude has been shown to trigger a 28% reduction in perceived stress, 23% lower levels of the stress hormone cortisol, 7% reduction in inflammatory biomarkers, 25% reduction in dietary fat intake, and 16% lower diastolic blood pressure in comparison with not practicing gratitude. You look this study up, 2010, University of California. So just while we're on Dr. Emmons, he is probably the most prolific author of gratitude studies that certainly I've come across. But just to share with you his theory on gratitude in a nutshell while we're talking about him. He's got a two-stage theory. The first is that gratitude is an emotion that comes with benefit or gain. It's like one has received or obtained a positive outcome, right? So that's the first stage of practicing and experiencing gratitude. His second stage is that we recognize the source of this gain has come from something or someone outside of ourselves. So we acknowledge it from a person or a set of circumstances or a higher entity or something like that. I'd just like you to hold that two-stage theory in your mind because it really is important when we start to talk about the how of gratitude. Let's do a little bit of a mind exercise here. I want you to imagine two people. They might be people that you know, or you can make up these imaginary people in your head. One of them is extremely grateful for what they have in their life. And they say thank you a lot. They acknowledge other people, and they thank other people, or they might thank their spirit or some other higher purpose, or they might just go through life expressing appreciation. Right? Imagine that person. You might be standing, if you haven't been in trouble with this, you might be standing in a workplace or someone that you know in your family or a friend, or even you could be standing at the start line of a running race. And imagine that person who is thankful to be there and feels like fortunate and lucky and is grateful and appreciative. Right, now imagine another person to contrast that, who is the opposite of that person. Sometimes it's easier to define something by doing the opposite. So imagine the person who has no gratitude, who doesn't appreciate anything. They're kind of resentful and they're entitled. And can you kind of feel that energy changing in your body as you think about this other person? And the person who does not feel grateful for anything and expects and is entitled and think about more of those characteristics. As you hold those two people side by side, it's so funny how I can feel the different energies just even talking about it. So just generally, who do you think's happier? Who do you think's having a better life? Who's more attractive? Like, who do you want to be around more? I don't mean attractive from, I just mean who are you more attracted to as a person? And this is somehow how we can start to define gratitude. Now, fast forwarding this to a performance state, can you imagine the runner who's on the start line of a race, who's extremely grateful to be there, who's grateful to the coaches and the mentors and the nutritionists and the friends and the family who's helped them to get to that start line, grateful for the volunteers, grateful for the race directors for putting on the race, grateful for other people to turn up to have a competition against, grateful for, you know, being safe and being able to do this, grateful for their health, grateful for their running shoes that they're wearing and their, you know, their watch that they're wearing, and the streets are closed because it's a big race. And just imagine that as a performance state of mind to be in. Again, if we contrast it to what's not there, so repeated studies have shown, so Hugh Van Kylenberg from the Resilience Project stated that according to, there's been 6,000 different studies based on, that's based on gratitude that says, and the nutshell is, when you're experiencing gratitude, you can't experience a negative emotion at the same time. Right, sounds obvious, but so important to us. So the runner who's on the start line who's experiencing these grateful states cannot experience anxiety, cannot experience fear, is not thinking about future, is not thinking about outcome, is grounded in humility, presence, focus, abundance, appreciation, all of these beautiful words and states. Right, let's get into a little bit of defining gratitude and a bit of brain neurology so we can kind of get our head around what it actually is. So just going to start with a caveat. A lot of this work has come from Dr. Andrew Huberman from the Huberman Lab podcast, but also so many other things that I've dug up and reached and researched to bring together for this for you. So let's start with this from neurology. Your brain scans the world 5 times a second to look for perceived threats and perceived danger. So we need to start with that in mind, but that is why our mind has a negative basis. Our mind is not wired for happiness and to have a great life and to be grateful and to experience joy and all those wonderful things. Our mind is wired to keep us alive. So let's start from that baseline so we can all kind of start from there. So Ben Crow says it best. Our mind is Teflon for positive experiences and Velcro for negative experiences. And this is why. It's wired to keep us safe. Right. So a little bit deeper into that, there's two neural circuitries of the brain that we need to understand when we understand gratitude. There's appetitive, which is, I think, like an appetite. So it's spelled kind of like appetite. Appetitive brain circuits and the aversive brain circuits. So appetitive, think of it like an appetite. It's when your brain wants to move towards something or be closer, so to a person or a thing or experience, for example. An aversive neurocircuit, it freezes the brain or it puts it into a state of moving away or backing up. And I know you've all heard so much about parasympathetic response, sympathetic response. You're walking through the long grass and you see the lion that hasn't seen you and you have an aversive response and you freeze and you gently back away from the lion, the long grass, before it sees you and eats you. This is where the brain circuitry was developed over so many millions of years. So looking at these two circuits, we need to understand how they are activated. Now, if you think about two parts of your brain we're going to learn about today, the prefrontal cortex, which is the thinking cap, the most recently developed part of the brain, the thinking, how do we perceive the world, coming from, spit it out, our perception of the world, context for the world, our thinking, planning, thinking cap of the brain. That's the PFC, prefrontal cortex. The other part we're going to look at, interesting enough, is the hypothalamus, which is, we're going to think about it in two ways. First of all, it is associated with memory and recall. It's also associated with releasing neurotransmitters into our brain and body. So kind of, if you think about neurotransmitters such as dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, those kind of things that you hear about so much. So the prefrontal cortex is kind of like the director, and the hypothalamus, you can think about in this vein as the pharmacist. So think about the prefrontal cortex as the director or the conductor or the boss, if you like, the decision maker. Now, we're going now into the work of Dr. Bruce Lipton, who wrote a fascinating book, The Biology of Belief, probably about 20 years ago. So he the analogy was that the hypothalamus is the pharmacist, and when it gets a direction from the director to say, here's an experience we're having, I'm framing this, or I'm giving this the context of something that we enjoy, this experience right now. So it might be something that you're moving towards, you're enjoying the time with friends, or a nice meal, or a great show you're watching, or you're having a really good run and you're enjoying it. So it's being judged by your prefrontal cortex as a positive experience. So it says to the hypothalamus, we are having a positive experience. So I want you to kind of communicate that to the body. So the hypothalamus goes, yeah, I know how to do that. And it mixes up the cocktail of drugs, which is the neurotransmitters and emotions and hormones. Neurotransmitters and hormones, not our emotions, which lead to the emotion. So it might pump out all this serotonin that makes us understand that this is a feel-good moment, right? And that links to the circuitry of appetitive, again, moving towards, I want to get closer, I want more of this. Dopamine is released in this circuitry as well. Now think about dopamine as the more transmitter, the pursuit. Sometimes it's being called the reward, which is kind of a reward as well, is true. But think of it more as I want to move towards it. I want more of that. I want to pursue that emotion. Right. Now I'm getting somewhere with this, so stay with me. When we can shift into that neural circuitry of appetitive, moving towards, we are going to experience more positive emotions and we are going to experience less negative emotion. Right. That is the state that gratitude can put us in. And again, contrasting that to aversive, it's when the prefrontal cortex says, I do not like this. This is a threat or a disgust or something I don't want to experience. And then the hypothalamus says, okay, I know how to mix up that cocktail as well. Goes into the pharmacy, mixes up the cortisol and all the other stuff, adrenaline, which is called epinephrine in the USA, noradrenaline, which is a different type of transmitter. Norepinephrine is the same thing as noradrenaline. And you get all these other horrible feelings in your body, which wants you to move away from it. So we're understanding this so we know what's going on in our brain. This correlates with the challenge and threat state. I did a podcast on this last year. So challenge state and a threat state. So when we choose a challenge that we want to do, we put our brain into this appetitive neurocircuitry where it's like, I know this is hard, but I'm doing this. I want this, right? And the hypothalamus gets to work and starts to mix up the drugs that says, we're going towards this. Like, we're going to be brave. I'm going to use courage. I'm going after it. This is it. I know this is good for me. I don't like doing intervals, but I know they're good for me, right? And I know I'm going to be stronger. I know it's going to make me be more longevity as an athlete. It's better for my muscles. It increases my speed. It mixes up my training, which I know is good for my nervous system, right? So you're moving towards that. Whereas the aversive state, the threat state, takes us away from that. It's like, oh, intervals. I don't want to do intervals. We did intervals last week. How come I have to do intervals? And it's a threat because ultimately you're whinging is because you're afraid of something. I don't want to have to run fast. I'm not as fast as everybody else. I'm always one at the back of the pack. It hurts. I get DOMS the next day. This is when I got injured last time. And the story goes on. And then the hypothalamus goes, oh, the prefrontal cortex doesn't want this. I know we have to mix up to make us feel that. And it mixes all the negative drugs. So think about with challenge threat or appetitive and aversion, think about jumping out of an aeroplane. Like if you go skydiving or an ice bath, if you voluntarily go skydiving or get into an ice bath, you're putting your body into that appetitive neurocircuitry and you're releasing chemicals that are saying, I want this, it's good for me, even though it's, you know, it's a pain cave, I want it. Contrast that to getting pushed into an ice bath or pushed out of an aeroplane against your will, and that will be the aversion circuitry. Right, so why am I spending so much time on this? Again, gratitude will put us into moving towards or staying around what we've got. I'm going to throw my favorite gratitude quote at you now. Gratitude is wanting what you have. Now, if you can come from that state, imagine how you'll be different in your training, as you're racing, as you're helping other people, as you're going through life, wanting the things that you have. Now, that puts you in that state of abundance, which is I'm content and I am grateful and I appreciate the things I have, which means you were in the neurocircuitry of appetitive, which means I want to stay here longer and I don't have a feeling or a desire to chase the next thing or move or get away from this and move towards something better. All right, so I hope you're still with me. I want to move into last thing just to wrap this up is the stronger you feel the emotion of appreciation or gratitude, then the stronger and the more powerful the connection is going to be to the outcomes. For example, if you're doing intervals again and you can shift your mind to think, I love doing intervals. It gives me this. And then you can start to use mental imagery or visualization to imagine yourself getting better and better and better from the intervals and all the positive benefits. I'm getting more endorphins released. It's making me feel more alive. Intervals, just make me a better runner. They improve my running form and I just feel better after the intervals. If you can build more and more and more positive, gratitude and towards emotions, then the connection will be stronger and you will have longer lasting benefits and the habit will be built quickly because the pathway will be built harder. And as I say, the more it's fired, the harder it's wired. Now, a study referenced by Andrew Huberman again proved that repeated gratitude practices change your brain activity and your heart activity. So what it showed was repeated gratitude practices shift the functional connectivity of emotional pathway circuits relating to anxiety and fear and made them less likely to be active. And so what that meant was it shut down the fear and anxiety pathway and it gave the feeling for well-being and motivation and the pursuit to be more active towards the positive emotional states. Now, that's a big mouthful, but what it's saying again in a nutshell is what Hugh Van Kylenberg told us is that when you're experiencing gratitude, it moves to a positive state, which means you can't experience a negative state at the same time. This is important to us when we're thinking about pre-race anxiety or fear of outcome, or when we are thinking we're not good enough or having all the negative thoughts, the negative self-talk comes in. When we can shift into a state of gratitude and appreciation, then we will like eliminate the anxiety and the fear. Now, here's the caveat. Are we going to alleviate it forever? No. Are we going to have to practice the gratitude? Yes, as a habit. We're not going to do it once. It's going to be gone. This is a matter of if it works, if you do it and it works and your fear goes down and your well-being calmness goes up, that means it works. So the more you work it, the more practice and the more habit you get to, the better you'll be at this. My meditation teacher used to say, it doesn't matter how long you spend in that zone of meditation. He said, it's how often you can continue to come back to the breath and let the thought go. So that's what the same with this practice. Rightio, let's work into the how. I've got a whole series of practical tools you can use here. And really, you can choose one of them that'd be great to use or a multitude of them, either when you're running or when you're about to go to sleep at night or when you've got some journaling time or maybe it's the first thing in the morning, your morning meditation. Somehow you can fit this into your life. But my plan, I don't want to give you more things to do in your life. I want to make sure, I almost want to take things away from you so you can be more pure who you are. And that's why if you can find a way to incorporate this into your daily life when you're just walking around or in your running. And I'll give you some examples of that in the meantime. First of all, let's go to Andrew Huberman's protocol for gratitude. Again, he's so researched and he's so science-based that we're going to start with this and then move into more or different types of tools. So Huberman's protocol for gratitude was one that I'd never heard before. And this is why it's so interesting. So in all of his research, all of his study, he found out that experiencing gratitude through a story of somebody who's expressed either genuine gratitude for you and something you did for them, or somebody received genuine gratitude from somebody else for something they did. So let me give you an example. It could be that you lent your car to somebody because their car was broken down. So you lent them the car, right? And maybe they had it for a couple of weeks while their car got fixed. And when they gave your car back, they were so, so grateful for you that they came to see you. Like maybe they gave you a gift or a huge hug or wrote you a letter and they said how much it meant to them and how much they were able to do because of what you did for them. And that level of gratitude that you receive from them made you feel good, appreciated, and the experience of gratitude. So Huberman wants you to break that story down into a few parts. What was the struggle? What was the help they got? And how did it impact you emotionally? So the struggle was the person didn't have a car. They couldn't get to work. They couldn't run their kids around, you know, which huge risk for, you know, losing their job or kids not being able to get to school and everything else that goes along with not having transportation. That was their struggle. You stepped in and helped them. And the third thing was, you got a huge benefit from making their life, like taking away their struggle, helping them with their struggle, and they got to receive an immense, such a charitable, like not charitable, like a beautiful act of kindness from you. So Huberman wants you to wrap that story up into a few dot points and use it as your practice. So you visualize the time when you stepped up and you said, hey, take my car. And then you receive the gratitude, genuine gratitude. Right, that's one way to do it. The second way was you having a hearing a story about somebody who helped somebody else as a third person. Now, in the study that he references, there was a group of subjects in the study were sat down in a theater and they were shown movies of people in the Holocaust in Austria or perhaps southern Germany, my apologies. And they were shown videos of people in concentration camps being helped by other people. For example, there was a lady who was extremely sick and there was a doctor in the camp and somehow he found the medicine, even though he put his life at risk, he found medicine, got the medicine to her and saved her life in the concentration camp. That was just one example. There were other examples of how people had hidden Jews from the Nazis and they'd put their lives at risk to help these people. They didn't even know them. And then the movie shifted to later in life when that person came back, that lady came back and thanked the doctor because she helped him. She helped her get through her illness. Or the people who had hidden the Jews away, they reunited with them and they got to experience, meet their family, you know, realize how much they changed their life. So that's another way that you can experience gratitude. Now, in Huberman's work, this is the highest experience you can have of gratitude, these two ways, instead of the other ways, you know, which you've probably heard of, which is think about three things you're grateful for, which also work, but he's saying this is actually higher. An experience, personal experience of this for me was I heard my mentor, one of my mentors, express sincere gratitude to their mentor for the way that they changed their lives. And the time when they were 15, they came into their life when they were a lost kid, didn't know where to go. And this mentor stepped into their life and gave them, like, they saw them. They listened to them. They brought out their best. They saw their authentic self. And my mentor said to this other mentor, I wouldn't be the person I was without you. And I got to experience that. And that's an example of that kind of it didn't happen exactly to me, but I still got to do it. About 15 years ago, I was lucky to see Wayne Dyer speak in Sydney. If you ever know Wayne Dyer, he's an author and brilliant teacher who's since passed away. When he spoke, he told this story about how he used to stand up and give $100 randomly to some person in the audience just for being there. And the person would come up on stage, he'd give them $100, and he'd give the example of how the person who received $100 had a huge spike in serotonin. So serotonin is like the calmness, the content feeling that you get, that really beautiful, calm, content, happy state, happy neurotransmitter, right? So the person who experienced $100 got a huge spike for a random act of kindness from somebody. But then Wayne said, I also, through the giving, experienced a huge spike in serotonin for being the person who gives it. You know, thank you for being here, for example. Thank you for coming. But then he went on to explain how every audience member who witnessed that act of kindness also had a spike in serotonin. And this is what Huberman has confirmed for me 15 years later through this research, that you witnessing or thinking about and experiencing somebody else expressing sincere gratitude to somebody else will put you in this state of calmness, contentment, happiness, abundance, and positive emotions. And again, the more you can do this and the stronger you feel it, the more powerful the connection will be. Just to link it back, in case you're thinking, why is Rob telling me stories about some guy on stage handing $100 bills out and Huberman in his lab? It's because when you can bring gratitude into your running and into your life, your anxiety will go down, your negative emotion experience will go down, your humility will increase, your calmness, your presence. And if you can just take one of those things, imagine if you could just run your next race or training session in that calm, present, relaxed, focused, engaged, appreciative state. And imagine how much better your performance will be coming from that state. And again, that's why I'm sharing all this stuff with you. Right, so let's go on to some more hows. I'll go into this one. This is something that I personally use. I learned this from Sharon Salzberg, who is a meditation teacher you may have heard of, very famous meditation teacher. And this is called loving kindness meditation. Again, if this is a bit woo-woo with you, hang on, because I've got some lots more practical ones coming. Pardon me, just had a sip of tea. So loving kindness meditation. Loving kindness meditation is a spiritual Buddhist practice where you express to somebody either you know or you don't know, and often to yourself as well, that you want them or you to have a great life, for example. And you know, a lot of the mantras are, may you live with ease, may you be happy, may you be safe and healthy. And this is a mantra that they can use in meditation, it's loving kindness meditation. And you keep saying it over and over, may I live with ease, may you live with ease, may we live with ease. Right, so this is how it's used in Buddhist ways. When I learnt this, I started using it differently, and I still use it. And it's one of those things that's just a habit for me now. When I run past somebody coming towards me and I'm on a training run, say they're walking their dog on the path, I'll run past them and I will express this loving gratitude to them. And it's so simple. It's like, you know what? I hope you have an awesome day, or I hope you have the best life possible for you, or I hope you're safe and I hope you're healthy, something like that. My phrase is, I hope you have the best life possible. That's just the way that I say it, right? And it takes me 3 seconds. I see them, I look them in the eye, and I don't say that. I don't stop them and say, I just want to let you know, I hope you have the best possible life. I just say it to myself and I pass that on to them. And this is the way I use loving kindness meditation. And I only realized that I did this when I was interviewed in a podcast last month. And I was like, oh, that's exactly what I do. So you can do this for yourself. So wish yourself loving kindness meditation. You can also practice it how I do, like other runners, volunteers, and if you're doing a race, training buddies, coaches, or just people who are walking past you with their dog. Right, so that's loving kindness meditation. Let's go to some other ones you can do. Hugh Van Kylenberg, once again, author of Resilience Project. They've got one of the biggest podcasts in Australia, The Imperfects. So Hugh tells a story in his book, the original book, The Resilience Project, where he went to teach in India, and he was in the backwaters of India, like in the desert, and he went there in his 20s, and he met, when he was teaching at this school, he was kind of a bit lost himself, didn't know why he was there, and he met a young kid called Dunson. And if you've heard this story, it's beautiful, and I suggest you listen, because it's every time I hear it, I love it. And he was immediately drawn to this kid, Dunson. He lived in extreme poverty in India, right? So he managed to get to school every day where Hugh was teaching for a short while. And Hugh said he was just drawn to this kid. And he'd follow the kid around and he'd watch what he did. And this became the teaching of the Resilience Project, gratitude, empathy, and mindfulness. But the way that Dunson expressed gratitude was he would drag Hugh over and say to him, he would show him something in his life that he was just stoked to have, right? And the way he expressed it, because Hugh was there to teach English, so he would grab Hugh and he would point to his shoes and he would say, this. And Hugh was there to teach him English, because English was his third language, this Dunson's third language. And Hugh would say, oh, don't you mean this? And trying to get him to pronounce the, because it wasn't native for him. And Dunson would say, yes, this. And then Hugh would say, no, don't you mean this? And then Dunson would say, yes, this. So he would point to his shoes and say, this. And then he would point to his friends in the playground and he would say, this. And he'd point to the sunny sky or to the bird and he'd say, this. And he'd be so enthusiastic and so happy, even though he had so little. Hugh said that some of the kids, including Dunson, he was one of them, didn't have any food. So they used to cook rice for them at school. And he'd give Dunson a bowl of rice for lunch. And Dunson would go, this. And he'd be so stoked to have, you know, shoes on his feet, friends to play with, and rice for lunch. And so Hugh brought this back, wrote about it in the book, and started teaching this to AFL players and, you know, the athletes that Hugh was working with to increase their experience and practice in gratitude. In Coast to Cozy 2021, I wrote this on my arm in black marker, D-I-S, with the speech marker, the inverted commas around it, so that I could remember to look around and be grateful for the things around my environment. So that's something you can practice. And I know a lot of people already do this. And sometimes you'll be around. And I met a good friend of mine recently who said exactly that. We were running through the bush. It was absolutely beautiful. And he said, hey, this. And I was like, yes, how good is that? Okay, so next ones that I use or have used in the past. Reframing. This is the prefrontal cortex's job again. So reframing experiences from have to get to. So let me explain this. This was taught to me from a business coach way back in the day. And I've also amazingly heard Ben Crow refer to this same sentence. So it's when you reframe a sentence you say to from I have to I get to. Right. For example, it might be I have to do my long run on Sunday. Right. If you just change have to get to, I get to do my long run on Sunday. Doesn't that change the emotion in your body? It's changed your perception of the event. So your prefrontal cortex has gone from I have to, hypothalamus, can you mix me some drugs that I have to? And the hypothalamus goes, yeah, okay, I don't like this. And it's mixing all the bad stuff. And then you say, actually, I get to. And the hypothalamus goes, well, that's different. I get to. Okay, I can put some hormones and neurotransmitters for that one as well. So that changes and just say it out loud. I have to take the kids to school. I get to take the kids to school. This is a huge reframe, a simple shift in language, and that you can use and practice to, again, bring more of this gratitude into your life. One of my favorite games as I run is the How Lucky Am I game. So how lucky am I to be able to run on this pathway? How lucky am I to be healthy enough to go for a run? How lucky am I to not be injured anymore? Thank you. How lucky am I to have these shoes on my feet? How lucky am I to have a safe place to run? How lucky am I to live where there's clean air, no pollution that I can run in? How lucky am I to have this shirt? And you get the picture and just play it and see what happens to your physiological and your mental state as you play this game. That was taught to me by Shelley Taylor-Smith, Australian and world marathon swimming champion, And that's one of the things she used to say to herself. Thank you, Shelley. Now, the thank you game, again, it's similar to that. It's like, thank you for the road. Thank you for the tree. Thank you for the signpost. Thank you for my shoes. Thank you for my health. And it's a similar way to use the same story. Okay, next one. Writing a letter of gratitude to somebody in your life. This might bring up a little bit of fear or emotion for you, and that's perfectly okay. When you can express sincere gratitude to somebody in a letter, maybe it's just an SMS you send them or an email, right? And something that you express to them for the role they've played in your life, either through a gift they've given you or time they've given you or just support or whatever, a promotion they've given you or something, you know, you get what I'm saying. The most important thing is the expression of gratitude from you to them. This is more powerful when it's done for the first time, as in someone that you haven't seen for a long time or you've never actually thanked. For example, I wrote a letter when I did this exercise. I wrote it to my high school teacher some 20-something, maybe more years after being in high school. I wrote it to the teacher who, you know, spent time with me and saw me. And I wrote to him and I said how special that was, what it meant to me, and how he's the only one that did, and all these kind of things. And then, you know, I received a beautiful reply from him in the mail, in the email on the way back. So this is a subject, it's funny, I can feel the emotion as we speak of deep gratitude and deep appreciation for this guy. So you can do this, right? Think about someone that you either haven't expressed gratitude with, who's meant so much to you and helped you so much in your life, and you've never had the chance to express it or never taken the time to express it. And maybe this is your opportunity to do it. It doesn't have to be a huge thing. It can just be an SMS or a personal, you know, what, a DM on Instagram or one of those things. This will put you into that state of gratitude and appreciation and that appetitive neurocircuitry. All right, now let's get to another couple of things you can use. The notepad by the bed at night or the journal, three things you're grateful for the day. Don't make them the same things every day. You will just dilute this practice and it will not mean anything. It'll just be another thing on your to-do list. If you're going to do it properly. And I mean that by think about three things that went well during the day or three things you appreciate. And it might even be a challenge. It might be something bad happened, but you're like, well, thank you. You give them the opportunity to have some resilience and to work through something. So write something real, not just, oh, my kids, my dog, and my food. Yep, done. Okay, that's done. What's next? What do I have to do next? That's not how this practice is designed, and it definitely won't benefit you by just giving yourself another task to do. The memory again, so just to recap, the memory of someone giving someone, the memory, Huberman's memory, a story of somebody who has done a great thing for somebody else and them receiving gratitude in return. Again, these are all the things you've probably heard before. As you're running along, using that thank you or I'm grateful for or I'm noticing or I'm seeing this, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know what? If I just sum it all up, say thank you more. So I'm going to leave you again with my favorite gratitude quote just to make you understand, not make you, to give you an experience of understanding that gratitude is wanting what you have. And when you can put the attention and the appreciation on what you already have in your life, that will move you into an appetitive neurocircuitry. It will help the hypothalamus mix up the good neurotransmitters and the good hormones and all the good stuff that flows through, floods your entire body. It'll put you in a state of calmness. It'll put you in a state of wanting to be where you are and not someone else, somewhere else. And it will put you into a state of presence and focus. And that is how we want to approach our next run, to our next race, to our next conversation with our children or spouse or work colleagues or friends or the person that we're buying coffee off. And that is where I want to leave you today.
Thanks for listening to the Mindset for Runners podcast. I hope you got something practical and useful out of this podcast or something inspiring to help you get out for your next run. If you have a question about mindset for runners or athletes in general, please email me at robmason.run@gmail.com and I'll answer your question on an upcoming podcast. And if there's anybody you know who could benefit from the information I share in this podcast, please share it with them. See you next time.